Mother, don't you recognize your son?
Everybody, once again to a Sopranos podcast. As always, I'm Joe Spellman. This is
David Fiedernay.
And this is
Paul Gullius.
And we're talking about episode 12, Isabella.
Isabella.
And let me introduce to you our very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, DC Pearson.
Ooh. Oh,
yeah.
Hey. Oh.
Published yeah. author, part of Derek Comedy, and improviser, comedian, actor, writer, everything. This guy's everything if you don't know him.
Human being.
God forbid. Not for nothing, but that's all I got.
Oh, that was good.
Welcome.
Jesus fucking Christ.
He's just going to speak
we
in
get
lines
one
from the
in. Yeah, I'm just a soundboard. Human, just okay, soprano soundboard.
That's all we need.
Who's your shit?
So let's get right to it, right? Why don't go ahead and
do a quick rundown up top. But this is the second to last episode of the first season. We were just talking about, before we watched the episode, we were saying how... usually the second to last episode in a series is the one that's like the most exciting, the most dramatic. And then in The Sopranos, the finale like is sort of used to like wrap things up.
Yeah.
Right. But this one's, kind of kicks that off and the subsequent seasons follow. But in this, it's kind of like a moody, quiet episode with, mm-hmm. we see Tony in this, deep, deep depression more than we've ever seen him. Maybe more than we ever see him. Is he ever depressed like this again in the series? I don't even know.
The next episode he is too. He's sick. Well, he's sick.
What are you talking about? Are you thinking of Funhouse?
Oh, I'm thinking of Funhouse. Never mind.
Season 2 finale?
Yeah.
When he's like diarrhea and farting and all that shit? Yeah.
It's kind of like depression.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay, so we see him physically ill, but like we've never seen him in the depths of the depression that he's in this episode.
Yeah.
He's on lithium and Prozac, and he sees a neighbor staying at the Cusimano's house while they're in Bermuda, I guess. And it's attractive woman, Italian woman named Isabella, who ends up to be completely fabricated and in his mind. Right?
That lithium will knock you out is what I was going to say.
Will it?
I've never had it before, but I've known people have had it, and they're like... comatose.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it makes sense.
It like, puts you on your ass.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then that makes sense. Thanks, Dr. Damn. Spells.
That's, anytime.
It's dicked up.
And then the big thing that happens this episode is Olivia and Junior sort of enact their plan to have Tony disposed of for seeing a psychiatrist and razzing Uncle June about eating pussy earlier this season. But those are the two kind of main things. There's no other real storylines. I mean, Christopher's sort of like haunting Tony, like following him around because he's concerned he's going
to
do something.
Who told him to do that? That's what I want to know.
Other real storylines, you say, as though AJ isn't going to A, go to the formal, B, then decide he's not going to go to the formal because his dad got shot, and then C, go to the formal. That's an arc, my friend.
That is an arc.
It really
is. That's a good call. That's sort of, I wouldn't call it an A story. Maybe that's a lowercase A story.
What's higher than A?
right. But yeah, I mean, dude, the AJ scenes are fucking priceless in this, by the way.
It's a good AJ up.
First of all, gotta shout out the wardrobe department for nailing the middle
the
school age
lime green shirt.
Yeah.
Right. Also, was what we've talked about on this podcast. I don't know if you're aware, DC is AJ's new metal shirts, which is a Twitter account.
Oh, really? What a delight.
Awesome.
I mean, I have always enjoyed on my various watch throughs of the show. I think I've seen it all the way through maybe 3 times. That feels right.
Yeah, sure.
And I always enjoy in a number of other shows around this era, but Sopranos, it definitely jumps out because Sopranos is such a generally high quality show that it, sort of sharing this DNA with other TV shows in general, but also of the time, is really funny to me, where you have teen bedrooms or like preteen bedrooms or teen bedrooms where clearly at the time the production designer was just like, wrote away like, "Dear RCA Records, please send me posters for all of your acts." And then they just like, okay, they're here. And then they just put them up.
Yeah. Right.
So it's just like, you have, I can't think of a good example, but you just have all these incredibly incongruous, like, teens that are I don't know where they got these posters. Like, they're things that you would only see like in displays in like Tower Records
at the time, where it would
be like 40 posters for like Aqua. And 40 posters for like Puddle of Mud or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sure, it is funny that you say that about them like reaching out to record companies, because sometimes it's NSYNC, at least on the show, and sometimes it's like Cupid or like some like boy band you've never heard of.
Yeah, which is so is so wonderful. I feel like it's that era of like records be, or like CDs, I guess at the time, being like the biggest thing in the world and being such a huge industry, and just like still getting to see like that reflected in terms of like, oh yeah, there was just so many acts that got signed and they were like, you put out one album and then you got your poster on the wall of The Sopranos, and that's
huge.
That's what's happening. It's pretty amazing.
That's funny, because I always assumed that like they just like had somebody art them themselves and they weren't real bands. Like if they weren't people you recognized, like I just assumed like, oh, we couldn't get the rights, so.
No, but like recently,
either one I think is possible.
But there were some on Meadows' wall, and I was like, "There's no way that's a real group." And I looked at them, and I was like, "That's a real like
girl group
from the '90s that we've just never heard of."
And that was their biggest claim to fame. Was they were on Meadows Soprano's wall,
right?
Yeah, they always nail like that '90s sort of decor and shit like that.
His clothes
and
are like
clothes.
So baggy, scene in the hospital, and
and then like even like Meadow has like the bell bottoms sort of like almost JNCOs on.
Yeah, I feel like what Meadow is wearing is kind of a cliche observation, but I feel like what Meadow is wearing now. I'm also not a super cool person, but I feel like somebody could wear that and be cool.
It didn't stand out to me. I was like,
whereas
holy
like AJ's clothes, it's like that's better left in the past. Which is pretty much all I imagine. I imagine we're all about the same age. Probably what we would have worn we were all a little older by this time, but like that's definitely something that I might have worn at that some of those stuff or like
I aspired to
JNCOs.
Pants,
I don't think I was allowed to have JNCOs, but baggy cargo pants for sure.
Yes.
Yep. The gold. I did have a gold chain.
What? Where did you grow up?
Hartford, Connecticut.
Okay, East Coast.
Yeah. Where did you grow up?
Arizona.
Oh, in Arizona?
Yeah, very little gold, I feel like.
Yeah.
Not as much gold.
Wait, so were you watching it when it first aired, though?
That's such a good question. I think my parents started watching it shortly after it started airing. So I think they had gotten into it, I feel like. But when did I start watching it? I don't think I actually watched it when it like at the very beginning feel like maybe when I was in college I feel like maybe started catching a few episodes, which feels weird to say, like just watching like a couple of random episodes on HBO but then at a certain point when I was in college, like borrowed through a combination of Netflix when it was the actual discs and like borrowing the boxed sets, like fully caught up to at that point. Maybe it was just the first four seasons, I think.
I think
that was where I caught up to at that point, and it was still airing.
I'm always interested, because we grew up on the East Coast. We're all tri-state area boys, well, Connecticut. But I always wondered, like, how did this show, like, read in the rest of the country, like Arizona?
Right.
Because we grew up around, like, people, like, I come from an Italian family.
Yeah. Right.
Like, all this was, like,
but
part of the appeal was it was so recognizable.
Right? I always felt that way about Seinfeld, and I couldn't understand how, like, it had mass appeal.
I think there's, like, a U-shape where it's, like, if you're right next to it and it's people that you know, it's really appealing. I think a lot of cultural stuff is like this. And then if it's not, like, anything you've experienced, it can be very appealing to people because they're like, oh, my God. Like, I remember talking recently to, like, I can't remember exactly who it was, but like an older person, maybe at like a family reunion or something. And they were like, and I still can't believe that I just found out they filmed Seinfeld in LA. They were like, so like vaguely offended. Cause they were just like, they've been watching it for years going like, I don't live in New York, never been to New York, but that's what it's like. Yeah. And then when they found out that it was filmed in LA, they were like, wait a darn minute.
Wait.
But I do think
the streets aren't that clean in New York.
Exactly. There's no big sign that says Paramount in New York or whatever they shot it. But I think also an angle on it for me was that my stepmom is Italian. And she and my dad got married in like the early 2000s, around when this show was like in its prime.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I sort of weirdly late in, like, relatively late in life, in my teens, got an Italian side of the family, which I highly recommend. The woman who then became my grandma had never had grandkids before. So as I say often, I got like a never been driven Italian grandma, like fresh, you know, it was like, oh my God, like fresh off the lot. This is great. Zero miles. So excited to like cook and be grandma. It was like a weird sort of like, it was both exotic to me and then also newly familiar, or something I was getting to experience sort of for the first time, although obviously much less dysfunctional. I don't mean to be like, and as the show deals with, I don't mean to be like, or also got blowback for like, like, and then they were like, when my grandma tried to kill my stepmom, like, no, that didn't happen.
Good. I'm glad to hear that there was no murder plots in your
family.
We
finally just found out that she didn't officially, so it's great.
Oh, it wasn't her.
It was just,
But your dad did put a pillow over her face. Right.
But that was unrelated. That's our Christmas tradition.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you went to school in New York and you lived in New York. So,
exactly.
You must have, I mean, you're
then
definitely.
You pick up on.
Yeah, definitely identifying with it more than like all the, you know, New York, New Jersey surroundings I bet.
Totally.
Well.
I think so. And just sort of. But again, it's sort of being the thing of like, I didn't grow up around it, so it doesn't feel exactly like, still a lot of stuff that's very like East Coasty doesn't feel exactly like, that's what I know, that's where I come from. But there is a combination still like exoticism and familiarity.
Right.
I think.
I hear you. What do you guys think about the whole hallucination element of this episode? Because so as we come to find out, it's the lithium that's giving Tony these hallucinations. But Melfi sort of pinpoints it as like, this is a time where Tony really needs to fabricate this image of a nurturing mother in his mind. His subconscious is like providing that for him. But like, how do you think they handled? What are your opinions on how they handled the whole Isabella thing in this ep?
I thought it was kind of interesting because. I mean, I knew it was coming, but like, if you're watching it like fresh, it's your, you know, I think you're like, I think you could be like, is this a dream? Because it seems almost dreamlike. And then like,
with like the billowing white, like,
but Carmella sees it. So Carmella sees it. So you're like, oh, it's not.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, fuck, it is. I don't know. I think that's kind of cool the way they did that. They kind of like made you go back and forth of whether it was a dream or not.
Go ahead, DC.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say like when you say that, Spellman, I was realizing I think pretty much every time I've ever watched it, I've kind of at the beginning when that character, except for the first time, obviously, when that character shows up, been like, oh, this is a dream, right? Like he's imagining her. And then I feel like it's probably always at the same time of like when Carmella then sees her, I go like, oh, I guess she's not. Maybe I was misremembering that. Maybe that's a different episode. Yeah. He hallucinates a different lady, you know, like, and then it always, like this time watching it, I was like, when then there was the reveal with Dr. Cusimano next door, like, oh yeah, no, she's that there was no dental student. Like, it worked on me. I was like, right, I was right. It was fake. And then I was like, Carmella saw it. And then they had the scene. So it's like, I'm also, especially for somebody that like, you know, tries to like write narrative stuff for a living, I'm uniquely like gullible to story stuff often where other people will be like, oh yeah, that was clear from the first scene. I'm like, can you believe that guy was whatever? And clearly I'm not only that, but like for multiple rounds on the roller coaster, we'll still be surprised by the same things.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I remember being surprised like when I first saw it, but I also feel like now, like watching it, and maybe it's, you know, hindsight's 2020, and just the time that we're in. Do you guys feel like it's a little cliche? The whole thing of like, oh, that character was just in that person's mind, or oh, that character is me. Like that's been me the whole time. Like the whole like Fight Club thing. Like, do you think that's a little cliche now? Like, how has that trope sort of like lived over the past 20 years?
I guess so, but because it's not like such a huge part of like the arc of the season or something, I think it's
a little forgivable.
Yeah, it's forgivable.
Yeah, that I agree with.
It's
that.
Not like like Newhart show or whatever, and like the whole show the whole was just his dream.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's not. It's more just there to like illustrate like where he's at in his life, and also I feel like I don't know. I guess maybe just because I like the show so much, I'm willing to sort of forgive it or it's more granted that it feels like certain things feel more elevated on this show than maybe they do on other things.
Right.
Even though like when you look back on it, and again, literally I had the thought, wow, she wears a lot of flowing white clothes all the time.
And she's hanging up flowing white clothes.
There's, and there's a pergola or whatever it's called, that thing. That,
and then
that
they're having lunch in heaven.
Yes, exactly. Where you do wonder kind of like, you're like, was he literally just in bed completely like fuguing out during that whole thing? Or was he
at a restaurant, talking to himself like a madman?
And then
also there's a hallucination within the hallucination then, right?
Because he then has, exactly.
Yeah, he goes back to Italy in his mind and he sees her like breastfeeding the baby. It's just like, he had to have been in bed that whole time,
probably.
Right? Like he's not like up walking around town and babbling like nonsense, right?
Yeah, I mean, people would probably notice in North Jersey if he was like, at a restaurant just babbling,
right? Yeah.
And like, you know, he's so like watched, I guess, or protected that like, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of like he's in bed.
True,
and we've seen that before later we see that in scenes where he's like dreaming and he's always in bed.
I think like a little like tip off to that is that. That cut where so he's at lunch with Isabella and he's like, oh yeah, tumors of the gums, and then this hard cut, and it's Meadow like in the house like, Dad, come have dinner, and he's like, he's obviously been sleeping.
Oh, that's a good point.
So I think like in retrospect maybe that was like a little clue to...
There is something very relatable though about him having this. He's literally having a like fantasy where he's going like, oh my god, and that would be great, and I would meet this cool lady next door and she's so cool in Italian. He has these sort of like you were saying, like these nested things where it's like, and that makes me think of like Italy and where I'm from, and oh my god, she whatever, and all these different things. And then within that imagines, not even, it's not even like he's going all the way in terms of, as Melfi points out, like, oh, and then we like fuck or whatever. He's just in his own fantasy, even though he doesn't realize it's that yet. He then pictures, he's like, he tells his wife like, oh, and then we had lunch, and then she's mad at him, and she gives a very plausible, like perfectly written reaction to what that would be. Like, just, I think I really relate to the idea of like, oftentimes when I'm going down the road in my head, I'm like, wouldn't it be cool if this thing happened to me or whatever, and then, or this thing happened in my career or whatever, and then I think, yeah, but then you know what would probably happen is whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm sitting across from that person 20 years later, and they're like, you know, well, we never really, whatever, blah, 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 and it all went to shit. And I'm like, wait, this is, I was, this started out me being like, wouldn't a cool thing, whatever cool thing happened. No, so I do
sir,
find that.
Do you have a Ralph's card?
And the answer is, I do. It fell off my keychain. Now it's shoved in my wallet like an actual card.
Yeah.
Thank
but,
you for
but
reminding
me. But that's true,
me.
Though. That's sort of like, I think it speaks to Tony's frame of mind at the time. When Carmilla's like, you are a piece of shit. You don't even take me to dinner. I wash you and I bathe you. And that's Tony's subconscious beating himself up, right? Like, just because that's how he's feeling at the time when we like drop in on him here. So I think you're right. I think the writers are pretty good on this.
They are pretty good.
this is one of the most well-written scripts of the season, I thought.
I think so, because it really does feel like it could have come in a later season, especially with like the whole sort of, with the hallucinations and like being in Tony's head.
I think the reason I was reminded of Funhouse, because it has that tone to it.
Well, he's sick and he's
bedridden and then imagining things.
And walking around in a bathrobe and shit. Right. So I get it, but you still fucked up.
Someone did.
Yeah, he didn't have the gi this time. That's
Gi. Before we got on the mics, like that this is that season one is kind of like you guys were saying, like, does the show in general, is it starting to age a little more than we would like to think or whatever? And I was contending, and granted, I haven't rewatched it in a while, like I think that's particularly true of season one because they were kind of like coming out of just like, here's the normal TV playbook into like, no, we're the Sopranos. Right. This is a like new type of TV and we get to do new types of things. Where I was noticing this episode or somebody even commented on it during the episode, like there are certain things that feel more of season one where it's like there's kind of these random needle drops where it's like, why are we having this just kind of like vague like contemporary blues rock that's happening? There's some very cool like needle drops in the episode as well that very like fit with Tony's state of mind. And then there's other ones where it's like, it's not really diegetic, it's not coming from anywhere, a character's not listening to it, this is just kind of like some music supervisor at the time was like, look, the guy from RCA that gave us these posters also gave me like $500 to put this in the show. So whatever.
When the guy gets shot in the head, we have to play Garbage.
Right. Exactly. No disrespect to Garbage.
No, love Garbage.
No disrespect to Garbage. But again, it doesn't quite exactly, I feel like Sopranos, especially as it goes on, was always so good at like picking the exact song that you wouldn't necessarily be like, this would be on Sopranos, but it also it just fit perfectly.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think other things about the show, especially in this episode, I was surprised by how much like it really is congealing into the Sopranos that we all sort of like know
For sure, love and remember.
Yep.
And I think somebody said, maybe it spells, somebody told me that like they ended up firing a lot of the writing staff off of this first season.
Oh, interesting.
Going into the second season. Was it you?
I don't think it was me. No, I didn't know that.
Well, he was wearing a white flowing gown at the time.
That's my fantasy, is spells nursing a baby in an Italian villa.
Hey, you know they fired all these people.
I mean, I hadn't heard that before, but it feels very believable to me, or I just feel like, I imagine when you're going to like create this show on HBO and you, as I don't know, David Chase, like might not even understand exactly what it is yet, or you kind of have in your mind what you want it to be, but you kind of sold HBO like, hey, you know, like analyze this, it's that, yeah, but a show, yeah,
right,
whatever.
Right.
And then, or I mean, I don't know how much that factored in or what the order of those things coming out was, but like, as you're sort of, you yourself are figuring out what it is, it might not even be those people's faults, but you're going like, oh, we hired a bunch of guys that are just like, I write mobster jokes, and that's what I'm good at. You're kind of going like, it's not exactly just going to be that all the time.
Frank Renzulli.
Yeah, he had some fine tuning to do in the writer's room, so so that does make sense.
I have a feeling when episode 10 came around, he was like, whoever wrote that episode is gone. A hit is a hit. It's the one with Bokeem Woodbine. It's like generally regarded as one of the worst episodes.
Interesting.
He plays Massive Genius, the rapper.
It's a lot of grown-worthy like rapper talk stuff.
Right.
Loathed it on this rewatch.
Right. Oh, interesting. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yes.
The show is evolving.
Yes. Oh, yes, definitely.
Oh, yes.
And it's tough to be like, okay, you don't want the you want the guys on the show, the characters, to feel out of touch. You don't want to feel like the people making it are out of touch, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Oh, yeah.
They but to the series end, whenever they bring in hip-hop culture or teenagers, they feel very much out of touch.
Yeah.
But I feel like we say that once an episode. So.
Yeah.
Yes.
But anyway, Uncle June had some great fucking moments in
this episode. When he comes to Green Grove and he's like yelling at Olivia
for
pretending to like be like losing her memory.
Oh, yeah. I was looking on Sopranos Reddit. There are still people making the case that Olivia didn't know what she was doing. Like, she did not order the hit.
Really?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Why? I
don't see how you you make that case.
I think especially in light of, and this is like, I know this is a finale spoiler safe zone, but I'm just say for anybody listening that if you haven't seen the finale, I'm about to not exactly spoil it, but more like
you can talk
the
about
general,
the finale,
not the literal, like the very, very ending, but like, in general, the sort of like the conclusion of the show, one of the things that I love about it so much is that there's this scene of Melfi kind of like reading this specific diagnosis about like there's this type of psychopath or sociopath or whatever that's basically going to like take the tropes of psychotherapy and use them and use what they might even feel like is their own emotional experience and kind of like feed that back into their own sociopathy, and it's going to make them better,
sharpen
a better animal, basically.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at Livia and you kind of go like, well, that's his fucking mom, like he's definitely created in her image, it sort of feels like, and I don't know how much they knew where they were going at the time, but it does feel like she's basically going like she knows exactly what she's doing the time. And I think, you know, and then she's going to use the idea of like, as Junior will, as she says in this episode, like, and Junior I think eventually kind of also we figure out as viewers like does eventually fully go off the rails, right? But like he is for a time going to be also be being like, I'm going to use this so I can get away with the evil shit that I'm trying to do. And on some level, even if I'm fooling myself a little bit, I'm always in control.
No, for sure. I mean, that pretty much summed it up.
But
you're right. Like when Livia is so adept at creating these lies and like feeding them into her narrative and like tricking even people today who are watching the show and can't clearly observe that she is orchestrating a hit on her son. Like she said, like that's good. And it's the writing again is like David Chase loves ambiguity. He loves having that question. Is she, you know, maybe she is losing it a little bit, but I think that feeds into Tony's skill as a criminal, obviously. And I think even like AJ in this episode, like you see a little of that, like he's just like detached and doesn't give a fuck really. Like it's funny to watch, but at the same time, like his dad almost got shot and he's like chowing down on a sandwich. And, don't give a shit. And then like
he's like all excited to drink his ice cold Coca-Cola, and then he's got to like walk all the way over to the other end of the table and take Olivia's chair out. So annoyed.
Yeah, I do like that the show kind of plays with throughout, like, and AJ, how do we feel about him? He's a kid, right? So he's good. And sort of like, you do eventually fall on the side of like, not only is he a big piece of shit, but he will probably go on to like run like a mate, you know.
As big of a piece of shit as his dad. Right, like, exactly. Like he's trying to use the excuse to get out of the dance. Like, that's all he gave a fuck about. Right. Like he didn't give a shit. His dad almost died. Like
the end of the show, he's like driving that like Mercedes, and he's like interning at like that like music company or something. And he's like on the phone. It's like he's a giant cocksucker.
Oh yeah, he's the worst.
Yeah, there's no way if that character persists in time that he hasn't like purchased and shut down like a Gawker style website. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I want to see that sequel to the show.
Yeah, that's Sopranos 2020 for sure.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, other than that, would anything else that stood out to you guys in this episode? Anything you liked, you didn't like?
Spells
always got a line or two. Yeah.
The attempted hit. I mean, do we talk about that at all?
Okay. Oh, orange juice.
Orange juice. Obviously,
orange
the
juice
Godfather reference.
Right. The Godfather reference. Vito Corleone with the bags of oranges.
Oh, sure.
So in the Godfather, and then like Vito, Tony also survives the attempted hit.
Doesn't he also have an orange in his mouth when he the Godfather? I
when
mean,
he dies,
when he
yeah,
dies.
Yes. Yeah, when he keels over in the garden. Yeah, so oranges. Yeah,
that's a reference to that.
That was definitely a reference to
another thing from like a lot of season one is that, you know, David Chase is like doing a lot of he's doing a lot of Goodfellas references in earlier episodes
and Godfather.
Yeah. Yeah, this just seems to be another one of those that we see a lot in season one.
And then, of course, I like it with some pulp later on in the show.
Oh, right, yeah.
When Carmella, like, got the wrong orange juice, and she just, like, throws the phone at him outside.
Yeah, that's...
I like the one that says some pulp.
Actually, I'm just recalling now there was, like, a fan theory that instead of oranges, like, going forward, when David Chase wants to, like hint at a forthcoming murder, it's eggs.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you hear about Ralphie. This?
So Ralphie's like making scrambled eggs in his kitchen. Before Tony realizes that he has to kill Tony B, his cousin, he's like standing by a dumpster and he like backs up for a second and he walks into like a cracked egg. And then Uncle Junior earlier in the season when he's losing his mind, he calls him you and Tony Egg. Tony Egg again.
Oh, right.
Like, wow.
I mean, you can't make an omelet.
Without breaking some eggs. Yep. Yes.
I had eggs before I came over here.
Oh, wow.
Joe, don't go home tonight.
Oh, no.
You got to go to the mattresses.
Oh, shit.
Grab a sandwich. I assume you're sleeping over.
Yeah.
I assume you're spending
Father Phil cameo here.
Oh, Tony's like just survived a gangland hit and he's still like got a jab Father and Tintola.
Well, that guy sucks, so
yeah,
I mean,
he does
a little light on Syl and Polly Walnuts for my taste.
Yes,
yeah, it's
you always notice it like when they're
because it was a very much like episode like we said very much in Tony's head and like he's just like they're just not present, you know?
But also again, just as somebody dropping in to watch a single episode of The Sopranos, I need a high dosage of
that's
Polly
what you
and
that's
Syl.
What you want. That's
yeah,
what you're looking
yes.
for.
Yeah. Well, again, in season one, I don't think there is much in a lot of the episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, we're dealing with like Tony and his mom and you know, there's like a lot of introduction to Christopher in the earlier. Right.
Yeah, we don't
episodes.
See like Polly Walnut's like home life no. yet and all that.
Yeah, there's still very really much side characters.
Yeah.
But we do get them in the limo with AJ and his date.
Oh,
yeah, that was so delightful. We don't talk to him at all.
Right. Which also felt, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, just felt like the ending of that sort of writing style in this series, right? Like, yeah, that's clearly just like a gag.
Right.
Like, oh, and then we cut to them in the limo and they're just staring down these gangsters. Could you imagine if you were in middle school and you had to go to a dance with some gangsters?
Agreed.
You
know, like, yeah, it does feel like, a little more sort of like from the pitch booklet than what the episode
need to see
will ultimately
that.
Become.
Yeah, it wasn't even that funny.
We didn't need to see that.
I think, in a vacuum, I'm like, I laughed. I think it's a funny idea. But then what I don't, where it becomes inconsistent with the Syl and Polly we will come to know is like, there's no way they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Because they're not like, he's the boss's son. They're not going to like not talk to him and not kind of, they have like a rapport with him. Whereas in this moment, they have sort of a kind of just a like, we're being tough guys.
Yeah.
Thing,
yeah
where it's
yeah,
just
yeah.
like, no, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, would they have even ridden in the limo with him? Why are they there?
Why are they there?
Like, I guess, like,
well, I feel like I feel like it is a little bit of a going to the mattresses thing of like, our son's going to go to this dance, but we're going to send some muscle.
Protection. In future seasons, it would be some sort of muscle there or something. It wouldn't be Syl and Polly there.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
They had not branched out the full Sopranos crew of like side characters.
What we're gonna say is that me and DC
that's right
we
our
watched,
Sopranos history
we watched the finale of the whole show, the series finale, live back in New York City when we were both living there. That's just a little bit of trivia, but Paul.
Well, we had what I feel was, and this will be a giant spoiler for the finale, what I feel like was uniquely like the greatest watching the finale experience that anyone had, I feel like, where basically the long and short of it is we were watching it at our friend Chuck Dobble's apartment, who's no longer with us and who I shared a lot of Sopranos love with, and really was like, we could sit in McManus, the bar that we would all always go to, and just literally just sit there for half an hour, especially if we hadn't seen each other in a long time, and just be like, oh, God forbid, not for nothing, but I mean, Jesus Christ, you know what I mean? Like, oh, you know, just very like where we're a little bit are catching up, but just speaking in those voices like, not for nothing, but I'm going to take a piece, you know, I don't know.
Yes.
But,
got a piece of dough in here?
Got to hit the piece of dough.
Yeah, exactly. Got to hit the piece of dough. He had a very good Tony Soprano, but at any rate, we're at his apartment and you kind of are conscious of like, okay, it's about to be like the last like 5 minutes of the show. And I feel like a lot of people had this experience of being like, it just seems like they're going to a restaurant, but what's going to happen? Right. Like, you know what I mean? You're like, you're aware of how much time is left and you're sort of going like, but what's going to occur? And our other friend, Amber Petty, also big Sopranos fan, had been working that night and had just like gotten off work. So she was late to the Sopranos finale party.
I think I remember this now.
This is like, they're like on like the second, third floor of this, like, you know, however many story New York apartment building. And you like have to like buzz up. And so she's just gotten there. It's literally like the last 2 minutes, which we all know pretty well, you know what I mean, like where there's just like, it's incredibly tense because you're in there
trying to park
exactly all of the things are happening where they're trying to build the tension for you, the audience, and just like all these little quotidian things are happening. You're like, what's gonna happen? There's only 90 seconds left of the Sopranos, and then it starts going like like Amber's here, and it's a weird thing where it's like Chuck's like, fuck, I gotta buzz her up, but I don't want to, whatever, so that's adding to the tension. And then he finally does buzz her up, and we like it, like hat, like the thing happens and we're like, wait, what happened? You know, had that experience of being like, did the cable cut off, like whatever. And then it's just like executive producer David Chase, and we just got this extra experience, and then she got to come up and be like, what's going on? And we're like, you have no idea.
I do remember that.
Yeah, it was
now.
Like an extra sensory, like sort of 4DX kind of immersive
extra
experience.
Extra.
Oh my God, that would have
worst
driven
timing
me
ever.
Insane.
Oh, what a delight. So that still to this day is a big is already very much laid into my consciousness and my experience of the show and the finale.
Not like the final moments of a series finale that you love. Like I get mad when anybody's bothering me outside of like watching an episode.
If it's the last 90 seconds of The Sopranos.
And somebody's like buzzing me. Oh my god, man, that would have destroyed me. My psyche would have shattered.
Yeah, I also think it was pre. You could put it on, or I don't know if it was literally pre this technology, but maybe it just wasn't available. I think we were just like on edge that it was like you're not going to pause it.
Right.
Either
we
couldn't or we definitely weren't.
Yeah,
going
I don't
to,
remember right. if we did or not.
It's like
I don't think so.
It would have ruined it forever though, because then that like tension that's being built is just like broken. Right. Everything's let out of the room. You made the right call.
Yes.
Very nice.
Cool. Anything else about this app? Good app. we got one left in season one now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rounding it out.
Yeah, stay nice. Tuned.
Oh, I met 3 cast members of The Sopranos recently.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, for real?
I did.
Who did you meet?
I wrote on the MTV VMAs, which I do sometimes.
Very nice. This
year it was in New Jersey. It was in Newark, New Jersey.
I saw that they were there.
And
yeah.
they did one of the things, and I was so excited about this as a Sopranos fan from very early on in the process. They were like, we want to do like get some cast members of The Sopranos and have them present an award. And so it was Vincent Pastor,
right?
Jamie Lynn Sigler, and Dre DiMatteo.
Right.
And it was so, I like to get to, basically these shows are just a meat grinder of content where you're just like I don't like using the word content, but on these shows it's like you are cranking content. You are really just like writing so much. Like people always ask like, what do you even write on those shows? And it's basically like anytime somebody comes out on stage and they're like, Webster's Dictionary defines best video as whatever, that's what you write. You're doing like multiple drafts of things because people are always like dropping out or getting switched around or whatever, so you're just like constantly cranking stuff out. And I feel like me and the other two writers that were on the show, who are both literally from New Jersey, like everybody had the right like attitude of like, but this moment is sacred.
This will be good.
You know? And
that's
so
amazing.
We wrote like a bunch of different stuff and ultimately like the thing that we ended up doing on the show I think ended up being really fun. But we did get to see them because basically all the people like before they go out and say have their moment, they come back to what's called pre-read where they just like look at the stuff on the prompter and it's their last chance to like make changes. So if you ever see somebody on an award show come out and be like, what is it? I didn't write this or whatever. That's not true. They saw it.
They're lying.
So
Travolta saw Idina Menzel's name for sure.
Well, that was Adele Dazeem had been booked previously. He said yes under the auspices of like it's going to be Adele Dazeem, right? And then they didn't have the heart to tell him like, oh, it's going to be
Adele. Yeah, that's the only way he would agree to it.
Oh no. All that to say, I mean, there's no amazing story off of it other than they all looked amazing, were super genuinely nice, and were just like very like cool and like. Basically, like both, at least two of them, Jamie Lynn Sigler was just like super nice, read her thing, was super funny. And then both Vincent and Dre both like pitched little things that would be fun, like got it. And like on top of the premise where there was something about like Dre saying like, I want to shove, like, let's just get out of here. Like, let's shove this like Moon Man statue in my panties and we'll go or something. And then Vincent pitched just like after you come back from the package where it's like, here are your nominees, that he was going to lean over to, I think, Jamie, who had the envelope with the winner in it, and be like, I'll give you $5 if you say Jonas Brothers. And then the Jonas Brothers did win and they were all excited because they're from New Jersey. So, Nick Jonas acknowledged it on stage. He was like, it's great to win for a Jersey boy to win from the
Dude, I love that. We were traveling and we were just like, we saw that they were presenting and we were like, what? Oh, the Sopranos were present. Yes, that was why, because the show is in Jersey. Oh, just that's it. Yes, exactly. So there was like
a bit like Sebastian Maniscalco was the host, although not from Jersey, kind of has a little bit of that energy. And so there was a little bit of a loose theme around that. And then the show ended with like a big like New Jersey hip hop medley that was actually very cool. And again, it was one of those things where I was like, what's that?
Were the Jersey Shore people there?
I think they were, but I would have honestly thought there would have been more Jersey Shore content on the show. They ultimately, I think, like steered away from that for whatever. I think they were just keeping it a little broader with the Jersey stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that was very exciting.
It's great,
it's great to hear that
they were all like pretty cool. And,
yes,
and
they were all just very stoked, I think, because it's just like, it's such a cool, and then it's like they were acknowledging on the thing, like it's 20 years since like the show came out and whatever, and I think they were all just genuinely like, fuck, cool, we're just like standing here at what is for at least one night like somewhat the center of pop culture-y stuff, and it's awesome, and they're the best. People, I was so excited.
Amazing. That's awesome. I'm so jealous.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
All right. We want to head into some other segments.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, now we're going back to our trusty segment, Have You Ever? Just going to run down some questions for DC about stuff that's happened to him, and see what you got. Have you ever suffered from depression?
No.
Have you ever been, like, sad about something?
Sure.
Have you ever been sad about something, and then you realize it was because the thing you were sad about was your dad chopping like an old man's fingers off with a meat cleaver?
No.
Okay.
Can you elaborate on that?
Feel free to elaborate. Have you ever hallucinated, whether it was just naturally or from medication?
I took
or
shrooms once at a party, and my friend and I sat on the couch all night waiting for them to kick in, and they never did. And then somebody afterwards was like, "Oh yeah, those were really old."
Mm.
That's the end. But the short answer is no.
No. So you never had a hallucination where your next door neighbor's Italian dental student is breastfeeding you and creating an ideal mother figure that you often craved in life?
I have not.
Okay. Interesting. Just writing this down.
Noted.
Okay. Have you ever put someone in a headlock before?
That's a good question. Have I ever put someone in a headlock?
Give him a noogie or something?
I've given a noogie. I'm a big brother. I've given a noogie or two in my day.
Oh, you had to have.
Have you ever, like...
That's a big brother thing.
Noogies.
Right.
It's classic. This is also kind of classic, but have you ever, like, given someone a noogie because they were trying to kill you because your mom and your uncle put a hit on you? Or?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
None of my little brothers, to my knowledge, have ever tried to do that, but maybe they hid their hand very well. I don't know.
Yeah. Have you ever met with a doctor before?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever met with a doctor in their car, like alone at night, like in a parking lot?
I haven't. And that scene was genuinely still somehow surprising to me. I was like, when Tony and Carmel showed up, I was like, oh, right. Okay, cool. But it is, that's, I think, like the difference between one of the scenes that feels a little more heavy handedly, like, whoa, what if a mobster was whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
But that one I thought felt genuinely like it didn't overplay its hand, but it is like, oh, that's like a thing you would do on the Wire or something, right, but it's like your therapist.
Right. Have you ever gotten a hand job before?
Yes.
Have you ever been to a funeral of an old lady who had given you that hand job?
No, but again, this is also prompting other shit we should have talked about.
Yeah.
But like, what a good scene. Because it's just very funny and dark, but also really that good Sopranos like mortality stuff where you really feel the sense in which Junior is just being like, oh, my whole life went fucking by. And these are people who I know in this one context who now we're all old. We don't feel old. I don't feel old. You know what I mean? But he's just going like, oh, well, that was it. This is who this person was. Now they're an old lady and they're in their casket.
Yes.
Yep. Is really tough.
Yeah.
Tough
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. That's really tough.
really dark, also really funny.
Absolutely, yes.
Hand jobs are funny, guys.
And this is something that it's no surprise to anyone, but it is like maybe to people who haven't seen the show. But and I think ultimately not even in the way that they necessarily set out for it to be, or that maybe whoever bought it at HBO back in the day sort of thought like we're gonna have this mob, it's gonna be kind of a comedy thing, whatever.
Yep, right.
They might not even have known the ways in which it was gonna be funny, but is truly the funniest show.
Oh, thank
ever.
You.
Yeah. And all good things are funny on some level.
Yeah.
Like not even this funny, but like anything that I think that's something that people forget when they're trying to make like prestige TV where they're just like, it has to be adult. And adult means no smiling and just tits everywhere.
And they're
fucking and they're dead.
Yeah.
You know, and then like that's like, it. Yeah. And that's
walking
that's prestige.
And talking for 10 minutes.
Right. Yeah. But never being like, oh, it should also be funny because life is funny. And if we're trying to capture life, it should be funny.
Yes. A couple more. has your wife ever gotten mad at you?
Yes.
Has she ever gotten so mad at you that she threatened to cut off your dick?
No.
Mine has.
Right.
We know.
Just yeah, like can I see my answer to Joe?
Yeah.
Joe's going to be my proxy on this one, Joe?
Yes.
Spells,
I just
did
wanted
cut
to
off
jump
dick.
In here.
For those listeners that
I've hallucinated.
Don't know Joe's wife, that's completely believable.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, last couple. Have you ever heard anyone talk shit about your relatives?
Yes.
Did you kill them?
No.
Okay. All right, thank you. That was have you ever?
Have you ever?
Have you ever?
And you are not a sociopath.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
All right, you passed. You don't need the lithium. So sorry we gave
fantastic,
it to you before.
Because it looks like it can really break either way.
My apologies for giving you that huge dose before we started recording, but you can flush it now.
Do we want to roll straight into fucking internet?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so this is a segment where we peruse the internet for things currently being talked about in The Sopranos.
All right.
Not a lot of great stuff this week, but I got some commenting on this episode from Twitter, at ThurgoDatman41.
Oh, yeah.
He says, I think Thurgo is a man's name. I don't know. Finally getting time to watch.
I like that we're presuming that's his real name.
Finally,
it's like ego.
Finally getting time to watch The Sopranos and season 1 episode 12 called Isabella, How Tony Escaped from the Two Guys Who Tried to Kill Him. Amazing at point blank range. How he didn't get shot. Shaking my head. That was too unrealistic. Thoughts?
I mean, that's valid.
Sure.
Yeah,
I mean, that guy is so close to him.
Yes.
He sticks
his
hand
shooting.
Into the car for no reason when he has a gun.
Right.
Which doesn't really hold up. I think if you're as good as Donnie was making you out to be, Donnie, the guy who Junior and Mikey finally shot in the alley there, you're not sticking the gun through a guy's car window to shoot him point blank.
But A, right. Donnie was kind of a shithead.
Yes.
So maybe what Donnie thinks is good and what other people think is good are
this is what
things.
We've come to find out.
I was surprised that Donnie was such a fucking flunky. That like Junior
this
like
is a huge thing.
Went with him and then whoever he recommended, I'm not confident in their abilities either.
But
right.
Also, I feel like though Junior, I feel like a little bit, I kind of buy it a little bit just because like Junior is so out of touch that basically it's like Junior, he's clearly been like sidelined to a degree, so he's not.
Right.
If he had gone and asked like Christopher or maybe Paulie or Sil, it would have been a different story.
Right.
This
Unless
is the guy
like,
that kind of got his own shitty faction.
Right. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. It's like Mikey Palmisi if he recommended him because he's a fucking Joe Jerkoff.
Right.
But that said, I was thinking when we were watching the episode, both like, oh, this is a cool scene, or like, oh man, it really
it's
like
so it's well shot,
very
and so
cool,
well
very
done.
Well shot. Like,
yeah. mm-hmm.
But then also agreed, like, okay, that's kind of hard to believe. But then when he's driving away and then he hits the car because he's so excited and he's so feeling like that was really cool.
Yeah.
That I feel like really helps kind of cut the unbelievability a little bit.
Right.
And it does also. But that scene was reminding me like, oh, right. Because there's people that watch these shows and they go like, oh, and I think ultimately this the ultimate sort of like conclusion or ending of the show with Tony's ultimate diagnosis kind of ended up, I think, refuting or a little bit like. being at these kind of people, but there are people that watch this show and they're like, yeah, Tony, you gotta fucking win. Yeah, you know, like, yeah, people are watching the show being like, Tony's awesome. Or people that watch, you know, watched Breaking Bad and were like, Skyler, shut up. Walter can do whatever he wants.
The people who thought Skyler was the real villain in Breaking Bad. Yeah.
So that a little bit, I feel like, is... There are people that are going to see that anyway, no matter what. But this, I think, was especially catnip, probably, for that type of thing. No.
Okay, moving on. On Reddit, we have user Darth Jubaka, 1138.
That it's Darth, and then not a play. The second is not a play on Vader. It's a play on Chewbacca. And that, to me...
This might be the most creative best name that we've had.
Honestly, like, I just wanted to read the name.
So, and go that man, 41.
He posts, again, assuming Darth Jubaka is a male. He posts, who do we blame for the hat? Why does Chris wear that fishing hat randomly in the middle of Isabella? Which is honestly a good question.
He says. Yeah. He says he was down fishing.
Yeah, he said he was
with something Nigerian.
He says he was on
someone's boat.
But why does he wear the hat still?
It's true.
You would think he would have anticipated somebody razzing him about the fishing hat before he got to the Sopranos residence.
Maybe.
And perhaps left it in the car.
Unless
that was his cover.
It's supposed to suggest how rushed he was to get to Tony's house. Right?
I guess, but it's not like it just happened. Tony was in the hospital and got discharged.
And he said he was in Tom's River, which is at least probably 45 minutes from North Caldwell.
Oh, is that a real place?
Yeah, Tom's River.
I don't know Tom's River.
It's on the Jersey Shore.
You know Tom's River?
I've heard of Tom's River before.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm the jackass.
It's on the Jersey Shore.
God.
You think they're going to give you a city that's not real? Sopranos?
No, I thought
also,
Tom's River.
I didn't know to have Jersey geography. They're not just going to be
like a guy's name. Like a guy's like, oh, yeah.
No,
you
I thought
know,
it was.
Tom
I thought
that river down there.
I thought it was a body of water. It's Tom's River. Okay.
I could imagine Christopher. And again, I'm inspired to defend literally every choice on The Sopranos. I'm like somebody where I'm like a biblical literalist I'm like everything in here is what God said, which is not obviously true, but that's a little bit, I feel inclined that way. And so I would imagine Christopher like getting down to the boat being like, oh sweet, you got the fishing hat, like the real fishing hat, putting it on and feeling like, now we're really fishing, this is great, I like this, I think I could pull this off. And then just it kind of settling on, you know how I'm not a big hat guy because my head's gigantic, but like where you wear a hat or some other garment that you wouldn't normally wear, and then eventually you just like kind of get into it and then you sort of forget about it.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
That's a little bit how I can imagine that hat getting there.
Right.
Or Christopher was a sort of early like East Coast precursor to Odd Future.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Hey,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. DC, you sold me on the hat.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Darth Jubaka. Hopefully we answered that for you.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll get you on the pod, Darth Jubaka.
Yeah.
Friend of the pod, Darth Jubaka.
And finally, this
wait,
one.
Wait. It could be you. Darth Jubaka.
If so,
you're like, I'm gonna
that
change
implies
it to
that I was
Chewbacca.
Like, I watched the episode myself, and then I was like, I got all kinds of time. Let's just watch it again.
And then just so no one thinks it's me, I'm going to change, because it can't be Darth Chewbacca, because people are going to be like, DC? So I'm going to Chewbacca. All right, what's the next
one? I'm going to rope in God's chosen people.
Yeah.
This coming from user late for court one.
Oh no!
This is a weird one. This was a weird one.
I can see
one,
why you're late for court.
Favorite body part in the series.
What?
And then he goes on to list again, assuming male. Ginny Sachs mole, Carmine's big fish lips, Tony's hairline, Bobby's gut, Phil's eyebrows, Paulie's wings, Christopher's nose. Adriana's hoo-has.
What?
Wait.
Meadow's nose job. Syl's hairpiece. Murmur's murmur. Carm's short hair. Or Ralphie's rectum.
I don't think that that's what hoo-has means.
No.
I think hoo-has is
the medical term
for vagina, right?
Yes.
And so I think this person thinks that hoo-has means
are
boobs.
Breasts. Yes.
Yeah. Means boobs. Yeah.
So this whole cord is out of order.
Please throw this out.
This cord is out of order.
Yeah.
Wait, so what was that just a
It wasn't a question.
Proposition?
Just this person just apropos of nothing, just started listing different body parts in Sopranos.
Oh, he didn't ask which one's the best?
Okay. No, he just kind of listed his favorites, I guess.
Oh, those are his favorites. Oh, so what are our favorites?
Yeah, what are our favorite
body
parts?
I would go, when I heard the whole, enormous list, I went with Paulie's wings.
Yeah, Paulie's
classic.
Wings.
Classic.
So cool, right?
Yeah.
Also,
Artie's bald head?
Artie's bald head's a good one. I like AJ's shaved eyebrows. Those are great.
Oh, yep. Sure. I think a specific instance of Carm's hand where she, the episode where, the was such a good sort of like use of like subjective camera where she beckons
Charmaine.
Yes. Brutal.
Yes.
Great, such good storytelling.
Great Carm's hand moment.
Yep.
Any other Sopranos body parts coming up? Yeah,
we're thinking of other ones.
Any of the body parts from Cleaver?
Cleaver? Yeah. Or any...
It sounds like this person was late for their murder trial.
right. Hey, what do you guys think great body parts of the Sopranos?
How about,
oh, shit, I'm late!
Little Carmine's hair? He's got a lot of hair all over the place.
Little Carmine's hair.
Oh, speaking of Little Carmine, he has... I always cite it as being... maybe my favorite, it's not even a joke necessarily, but maybe my favorite line in The Sopranos, which is, I believe, I don't know what season it's in. It's when Little Carmine's like really at the fore and he's having lunch with Tony, I think at like a country club or something. And he says, basically he's like he orders an Arnold Palmer and then he turns to Tony. He's like, I like them, but I never think to order them.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Which is just perfect, one of those like crystal perfect Sopranos lines where it's just like, that is literally everyone's experience of Arnold Palmer's like them, but you never think to order them. And putting that in a mob guy, in that guy's mouth is so funny. But also just goes to how human they are. But it's just the perfect. Oh, it's like that, perfect, that, perfect delivery, perfect everything.
Anti-analyze this.
Yes, exactly.
Agreed.
Slice of life.
And that's just like something they're just like siphoning just truth out of like into their scripts, like out of the real world.
100%.
Like that's just like case in point right there.
Yeah.
Funny little Carmine tidbit. Do you know that he wrote on the show Welcome to Wienerville on Nickelodeon?
What? I
did not know really? That.
He did. Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Interesting.
Wow. Yeah. What a cool career.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah. And between that and The Sopranos, he did nothing. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. That was a huge favor to somebody.
Yeah.
Writing on Welcome to Wienerville or whatever the fuck that
was. That was, they were like hands or sticks.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like,
or weird puppets. What were
like,
they?
There was
I
like
don't even remember.
Like a curtain you duck your head through, and
that's
then they put like a little fake body underneath
that's
it.
That's right. Yes.
And then it was like,
it was the guy's head.
And then they'd get somebody from the audience
Mark
to
Wiener.
Like, it will wienerize you or something. And then you play like a little game at the end.
I don't even remember this.
That also just could have been like a soul coughing video from the time. You know what I mean? I feel like it was a weird sort of like grunge imagery and kids programming.
You can put a
soul
coughing song
time.
Against that show, any episode of that
any
show,
day,
and that's a music video for that song.
Yes.
Yeah, that's all I got for fucking internet this week, guys.
Fucking
all
right,
good
internet.
Stuff.
Internet.
Good stuff.
Great.
DC, thank you for coming
thank
on.
Thank you for having me. This was delightful.
It's a pleasure. If you would like to reach out to us, you can always find us at OSopranosPod on Twitter and Instagram. You can email us at osopranospod@gmail.com. I'm at David Feudernick.
Well, where can we find this guy?
Well, I always do the guest last.
Oh, you
come
do?
On. Yes.
Oh, I don't. I forgot.
Joe is at Joey Spells.
Don't even reach out.
Yeah.
He just drunkenly, angrily like tweets at Astros fans at 4 a.m.
That's very true.
So if that's
very
your bag, check him out. You're at Paul Golias.
Yes, I am.
And DC, where can we find
you? I'm at DC Pearson. I'm at D. It's look for me on Instagram, but it's too hard to spell. I literally got Instagram this year.
I am riding
the fucking wave.
Yes. Enjoy.
This is what it feels like to be at the center of the zeitgeist. And at DC Pearson on Twitter. And then I have books that I wrote, Boy Who Couldn't Sleep and Never Had To, Crap Kingdom, available. I would say wherever fine books are sold, but they've been out for a while, so Amazon or other online independent bookseller, probably your best bet.
I feel like that's how most of us buy our books these days.
Sure, e-readers, etc. I read the audiobooks of them,
so
you clearly
nice.
Like audio, so enjoy that. And I'm out there.
And are you still, do you still do Shitty Jobs?
Yes, we do. Yeah, I'm on an improv group called Shitty Jobs. We do our show every Sunday night at 9:30 at the UCB Franklin in scenic Los Angeles, California.
Very nice. Yeah, awesome. And if you've never been there, go there. The shows are great. Very funny shows. Joe, you just performed there the other night.
I did. I did.
You weren't expecting to.
My buddy Mike Still asked me to perform, and I hadn't performed improv in forever, but it was fun. That's for nice. You guys. That's a little tidbit about my life.
again, slice of life.
Yeah,
slice
right.
of life.
That's right. Drinking Arnold right. Palmer for us.
Oh!
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 To recognize your son.